Welcome to the Property Investors Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an upload. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Enjoy this week's show and don't forget to share it with all your friends.
Hey, I'm Russell Leeds.
And I'm Tony Crook.
And welcome to the Property Investors Podcast. On this week's show, we're talking about deal sourcing or deal selling for dummies. Which is why I brought Tony Crook.
Thank you, Russell.
That's all right, no problem. So, first of all, I suppose, what is deal selling or deal sourcing?
So, deal sourcing is coming up with a whole package. I've used deal sourcers in my time as time savers. So, I've got money I have to invest, but I don't have time. You know, this year I'm 6 years old and I'm sort of trying to scale back my time. So, I don't want to be going out, you know, going to viewings, ringing agents, finding good deals. I want somebody to do that for me, find me good deals and bring me the deals to save me time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a time savers thing for me.
For you it is.
For me personally.
But what are they doing? What time are they saving you? What's their role?
So they're not doing what a lot of deal sellers think they're doing, just by going on Rightmove and finding a property and saying, Tony, I found this great property on Rightmove, because Rightmove are doing a great job of that already. Yeah, they've got a huge audience, etc. What is a deal seller? You're finding the deal maybe on Rightmove or from an agent or direct from vendor, and then you're then applying, if it's buy, refurbish, finance, applying, getting the quotes for the build, refurbs, doing all the donkey work on that side of things, and also then the research and what am I going to use the property for afterwards? Am I going to be using it for service accommodation? Am I going to use it for HMO? So researching the supply and demand in the area for that type of accommodation.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think then, if it's a Rightmove link? Because a lot of people will argue, and I hear a lot of people say this, like, why would I pay a deal sourcer to send me over a Rightmove link that I can get online myself? Like, why would you? How much would you normally pay a deal sourcer? If you're saying you use a lot of deal sourcers,
anything from £2,500 to £7,000, even £10,000. Yeah.
So why would you pay someone £10,000 or £3,000, whatever it is, to send you over a Rightmove link?
Exactly. You wouldn't.
So what are you paying? If it's on Rightmove, like you said, it was on Rightmove. Mm. What are you actually paying them for?
The actual research, the due diligence, the due diligence. I would always check the due diligence, but I want somebody to do their own due diligence for me to find out whether this is a good fit or not.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. So I totally agree with you, by the way. I think it's stupid when people say that. Oh, like, people say that about education.
Yeah.
Why would you pay for a course when you get it online for free? It's like, yeah, but because there's loads of information online, and for me to learn it, I've got to sift through all the crap to find, and I've got to piece together and do what I work. Whereas if I buy some training or a deal from someone that's good, they're going to do all that work for me. It's the same as, like, why are you wearing that? You got a wedding ring on.
Yeah.
Is it gold?
Yeah.
What? Why would you pay for that when you can go and get gold from the ground for free?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, because I don't know where to look for the gold. I don't have the expertise to shape the gold. I've got, you know, it's, yeah, I know you can get gold for free. Mm. It's someone just dug it up, right? But I don't want to do that. I'd rather just buy it. It's easier.
Exactly.
So the reason that you buy it is for convenience. And Samuel always says this, deal sourcers can make a lot of money, right? Because they're in the right in property, because properties are so expensive, it's such an expensive thing. You kind of lose perspective on the price. I'll give you an example, right? If you're buying a property for, I don't know, £279,000.
Yeah.
And you go, I'll try and knock them down. And you go, I'll offer you, so it's two, how much did I say? £270,000.
£279,000.
You go, I'll offer you £259,000. And they're like, ooh, £269,000. And you go, yeah, right then. That's £10,000.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. But to you, when you're negotiating, it's just like you're acting as if it's like 99p. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
It's just like, that's £10,000 that you just spent there. Same with things like your solicitors. You're like, how much is £3,000? Oh, okay. What are they actually doing for that £3,000? Well, would you pay three? If you rang up a solicitor and went, oh, could you I don't know, some mundane that you do every day, and they were like $3,000. You'd be like, whoa, that's ridiculous. Because you're buying a house and there's such large sums of money involved, it seems reasonable.
Yeah.
And I think deal sourcing is the same. It's such a brilliant industry to be in because for you it's so valuable. Because if you are buying a house, buying this service accommodation deal, whatever you said, and it's going to be making you, I don't know, $2,000 a month.
Yeah, yeah.
Paying someone $4,000 to find it for you is nothing.
Yeah.
It's a drop in the ocean. Whereas if they were charging you for their time to, I don't know, find you a nice restaurant to eat, Deliveroo, well, I'll find you a good restaurant. Oh, it's $3,000. You're in the wrong industry. So I think being in property is such a lucrative... Andrew Tate says, the money's raining everywhere. You just need to go where to stand, where to get wet.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
And I think that's right. Being in a deal seller is a brilliant place to go and get wet because people are spending such massive amounts of money. It just totally makes sense. So you use deal sources for finding the information, doing your DD for you. So if you wanted to be a deal sourcer, then obviously, we train a lot of people to be deal sourcers, and a lot of the deal sourcers that we teach are making... I was chatting to someone yesterday, actually, who's made... They're on holiday. They've got a system set up where they do view the properties, but they use people to view the properties and send a report. There are companies that do that. I don't know, the Viewer still around?
Yeah.
There are companies that do stuff like that as well. But they made $49,000 last week.
Yeah.
While they're abroad. $49,000. Now that, I'll be honest, that's ridiculous. But there are lots of deal sources that are making 25, 30. That's standard, isn't it?
Yeah.
We see that. That's not like, oh, that's a lot. That is standard. 25, 30 happens all the time.
Yeah.
Which is a month, that is. A month. 25,
yeah, yeah,
30
yeah.
grand a month.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy, really. It's crazy money. So they're going out to find these deals, but they're offering value for money for their investors because from your point of view, it's worth it, right?
Yeah, time is money. And my time is worth money. So if somebody can do the work for me, especially if they're specialists, if they're specializing in a certain type of deal that they're doing, then
I heard you mention this before. So do you find, if you were a deal sourcer setting up, I suppose the first skill you've got to be able to do is you've got to be able to find good deals.
Yeah.
But you would suggest not just finding a rent-to-rent and a lease option and a BRR and a development. You'd recommend specialising in a specific type of deal. I suppose the first thing is that makes it easier because then you've only got a master one skill. But why would you recommend that?
Well, if you had a problem with your heart, for instance, would you go to a general practitioner or would you want to go to a heart specialist?
I'd want to go to a heart specialist.
And would a heart specialist charge you a lot more money than a general practitioner?
Yes, I'm sure they would, yeah.
The reason why you'd want to do that is because it's something which is crucial to your living, so you put a high value to it, and you don't mind paying a high sum, somebody who's doing it day in, day out. They're doing heart surgery every single day, yeah? So you put your trust in that. With deal selling, once again, if somebody is based in the Midlands, for instance, and they've lived in the Midlands all their life, and they say, Tony, I've got a great deal in Hull, I would say, well, what do you know about Hull? When's the last time you went to Hull and so forth? Well, I don't know, I found this deal and, I wouldn't trust that because they don't have the knowledge, they don't have the expertise in that.
Yeah? Okay, yeah.
For instance, if I'm going to go shopping for a hammer, I wouldn't go to Walmart for a hammer because Walmart will have one hammer fits all.
Also, it's in America, right? So it's quite a long way.
Yeah, okay.
To go for a hammer, I'm going to fly across to California.
Do you have Walmarts in England?
I don't think so.
Okay. Anyway, Costco?
We have Costco.
Yeah. So you wouldn't go to Costco for a hammer because they'll have one hammer. If you have a hammer, if you go to want to advice, you go to a specialist like a hardware store.
But what about, stores like... Because obviously that's one strategy is to go... So what you're saying is go niche, right?
Yeah.
But Costco are a pretty big brand and Sainsbury's are a pretty big brand that haven't gone niche. So could you not argue that... Why would you say go niche when it works in other industries to not go niche? Like Costco, Sainsbury's, okay. Tesco. I could buy a hammer from Tesco, right?
Once again, I'm looking at it from the deal sources point of view. They want to charge the most money for the product they do. The whole idea about Costco and Walmart and things like that is they stack them high, sell them cheap. You know, they're not giving the service, so they're making a lower margin. But they're making the overall margin by bulk. So if you're a deal seller and you're selling 100 deals a month, yeah, diversify and go expand. But if you want to sell one deal for £10,000, go niche.
Yeah.
Be a specialist. The more of a specialist you are, the more money you can charge for those deals. And that's how you can do like that deal seller you explained, living in abroad, selling, it's £48,000 worth of deal selling, has to be good deals. It couldn't be £1,000 deals.
No.
They'll have to be good, meaty deals.
I suppose the first niche, like you kind of mentioned, that everyone's got, right, is they're a specialist in where they live.
Yeah, geographic.
So the fact that they live there and they know that area. If you were looking to invest in Hull and you had a deal sourcer who's like, I live in Hull, I know Hull really well, these are the spots that work, these are the spots that don't work, avoid these. And you'd go, oh, okay, well, this person knows what they're talking about, at least about Hull, right?
Yeah.
If you were starting from scratch then, you want to be a deal seller, you're obviously the first thing that you do is you get booked onto the deal sourcing crash course.
100%.
Which is only £1, it's a full day of training. I'll put a link, by the way, in below for the deal sourcing crash course, because that is a phenomenal program. You're there, right?
I am, yeah.
Yeah. It's run by Samuel Leeds, but Ricky, who's normally co-hosts the show, and Tony are going to be there as well.
Around, yeah.
So definitely I'll get booked on that. But once you're booked on that, which is the first thing you're going to do, it's £1, it's crazy. Once you're booked onto that for £1, then would the first thing that you did be to pick your strategy of what you wanted to sell?
Yes, me personally, that would be the case. So, and first of all, you'd look at what experience you've got already, what experience you're sitting with. So some people come into this industry and say, well, I know nothing about anything. And they may be in their 20s or 30s or even 40s. So we must have some knowledge. What I do is when I work with people and they want to become deal sellers and I want them to become the best deal sellers, I start looking into their history. And when they first of all say they know nothing about property, well, where do you live? Well, I've lived in Wolverhampton all my life. So you're an expert already, aren't you? You know Wolverhampton better than I do.
Yeah.
I live in London. I don't know it. I live in Brighton. I don't know it. So, first of all, geographically, what are you saying? But then, what do you do for a living? What have you done in your life? Well, I've worked in construction. My parents are builders. My parents are nurses. I'm a nurse. I'm a doctor. Well, already you've got some experience then in a certain type of industries.
This happens all... I totally agree. Great point. Happens all the time. Someone will say to me, then I find out they're an architect.
Yeah.
Or they're in construction. I'm like, hold on a sec.
You said you knew nothing.
You work in construction. So if you were doing BRRs, for example, you'd know how to price up the work because you're a builder. Oh, yes. Why did you not tell me that before? Yeah. That's like crazy. Or like you say, you're an architect. Or you're a solicitor. As soon as you say you're a solicitor, that builds trust for me straight away because I know that solicitors, for example, can twist, but solicitors can't lie, right?
Again,
and stuff like that when they're doing business deals and signing contracts. So it's like, this is crazy that you've not told me. So yeah, so the first thing you would do is look at your past experience and see what have I got going for me?
What's that relatable to property, et cetera? And more importantly, accommodation.
What about if it isn't relatable? Because some people won't be, will they? Obviously, you've got the area.
Yeah.
So the area's a good start. But let's say, I don't know, you're a footballer.
Yeah.
Right, you're not going to know... You're not going to know anything about construction. You're not an accountant. You're not a solicitor. You're not an architect. You're not a planning consultant. You're not any of these things that are related to property.
Yeah.
Let's think of something else. You're a shop worker. You work for McDonald's.
Yeah.
Right. So what's my experience now? What are you going to do then? What would you go for? Probably service accommodation based on the current legislation. Get it in now.
Get in quick. Yeah.
But what would you probably go for? BR. What sort of deals do you think are the most popular?
So once again, in your area of expertise, which is your geographic area, what's the biggest problem? Businesses solve problems. Deal sellers solve problems. So what problem is there in accommodation in your area? Now, if you grew up in an area, you know the area, and you've been living there, you could see, are there hotels? Are there lots of rundown buildings? Are there areas where there's regeneration, where the government's pumping money into certain areas, where the HS2 is. So once again, you just look around. Maybe not your personal experience in something, but maybe an area in accommodation. And what's the biggest problem? What's the need? So if there's an area that you're going to focus in on, like Wolverhampton,
what works well in Wolverhampton?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, for example, Wolverhampton's Article 4. If you lived there, you might know that if you were in the property world, right? So Wolverhampton's Article 4, which means that you probably won't be able to find HMOs.
Yeah.
Because you won't be able to convert them, right? So you might want to look for something else. You might think, okay, well, BRRs might work really well or whatever it is.
Mm.
So find what works in that area. Because certain strategies do work better in certain areas, right?
100%, yeah.
Your big strategy is BRR to service accommodation, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that's the best strategy?
For me, it is, because it's a way of recirculating my money. So being able to put my money in, pull my money out, so that I can then could do it, rinse and repeat, do it again.
Do you always pull out?
Sorry?
Do you always pull out?
I don't always pull out, but depending on whether I need to or whether I want to. I also mix pulling all my money out compared to capital appreciation. So there's more to it than just that.
Yeah.
But I'd like to.
You like to pull out.
The goal. So the goal is to pull out is all your money.
You've got to remember, Tony, I am very immature. Right. So I've shaved my beard off, you might have noticed.
You have lost 10 years.
So I can get away with being immature. That's the whole reason.
Right.
Yeah.
Where do we go from that?
I don't know. You were talking about
pulling out
your money, right, from deals.
Yeah. So I like to pull all my. So the aim is to pull all your money out.
Yeah.
So if you don't aim for perfection, you're never going to get perfection. So the initial onset is to try to do that. But service accommodation.
If you leave a little thing is right when you're renting out a service accommodation, the cash flow is so high. Let's say you ended up leaving 10 grand in.
Yeah.
You'd have pulled it out after 3 or 4 months anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
So it's going to be a damn good deal. Even if you're leaving money in, by the end of the first year of renting it out, you're going to have got the money back out anyway.
Well, if you get all your money, by definition, if you get all your money back out in the first year, that's 100% ROI.
Yeah.
Because we work ROI on an annual basis. So if I get all my money out at exchange and complete a refinance, it makes no difference whether, well, it does, but... From an ROI point of view, if you get it out in the first year, you've done your deal.
You're laughing, aren't
you? Yeah. And then you combine that with capital appreciation in an area that's going to go beyond the doubling in every 10 years, you're laughing. So that's why I like buy reverse finance.
I bought just a normal house, no BRR, did it a service accommodation. I got all my money back out in 2 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is crazy.
Service accommodation is... By far, I feel, one of the best strategies for the super rents. HMO is great, but service accommodation is even better. The reason why I like service accommodation better over HMO is that you are getting capital appreciation on your property, but you're also getting high super income. But also, you have free holidays. So if you've got...
Well, the other two you get with HMO as well, right? Your first 2 points.
Yeah, but...
Capital appreciation.
The third point.
Yeah, super rent, yeah. Free holidays. Okay, we know the real reason.
Yeah.
So, the reason that I love service accommodation is I get free holidays. Just be honest, Tony.
Yeah. I've got no bones about it. I like a free holiday. Who wouldn't?
Although most of yours are in Brighton. Don't you live in Brighton?
I can go from house to house. I don't mind.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. I agree. I actually think it's good as well to stay in your service accommodation properties because you're almost like a mystery shopper.
Yeah.
I don't even tell because my cleaners have got access to the diary, right? So they don't know the name of the guest. They just know someone's staying. So they don't know it's going to be me. So when I'm going in, I can see exactly what it's like. You're mystery shopping your own things.
I've never done that, but that's a really good idea. Yeah.
Do you book it out? Yourself, or do you just go in the gaps?
It all depends. You know, it's a funny one because...
Do you just sort of think, oh, there's no one in there tomorrow?
Yeah, that's great, isn't it? We used to always say, well, come on, kids, we're all going to go to Devon now because the house is free. Yeah, but it's winter, but still.
Yeah, but it's Devon, it's free.
But then also, like, you know, my wife had won her birthday in some in a location. So let's book out the place for my birthday. But then, which is great,
I begrudge that.
Yeah,
I don't let.
And then when they like you get a £2,000 booking, I'm saying, Sarah, please, £2,000. Let's just go to a local Indian restaurant.
or to a different hotel.
Or a different hotel.
That's what I've started doing now, because we go up to Asquat. We've got one in... The one we go up to the most is the one in Lichfield, because we've got family there. Mm. And I said to Anna now, I'm not... It's cheaper to pay for a hotel.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not... If it's free, if it's empty, we'll go, right? Or if we're staying for a while, if we're staying for 4 or 5 days, fine. But if we're staying for 1 or 2 nights, forget that. I might put it right in the middle and miss a nice big long booking, because I booked us the prime time Saturday night. Yeah, I agree.
So I'll tell her it's booked. It won't necessarily be booked. Yeah. Is this going...
She won't see it.
Okay, good.
It's not going out. No one will see this. No one will see it.
Or I've just blown my marriage 33 years.
Just don't tell her on the show. She won't listen. Carry on.
But yeah, I mean, when you're faced with a £2,000, £3,000 booking...
Hold on, you stop your story. So what did you actually do?
So I don't tell her I book it.
You tell her it's booked when it isn't?
Yeah,
okay. So you like just lie, basically, is what you're saying. You've just admitted on the podcast.
That ring that you spoke about could be going to scrap.
Yeah. No, I do the same thing, other than I just tell her. I just say, look, I'm not booking.
I could book it way too close, nearer the time.
Where? Nearer the time. And then we'll choose which day we go if there's a free one. And if there's not, we'll just pay for a hotel.
Yeah.
We're going up this weekend, and it's booked.
Is it?
30-day booking. Can you imagine if I'd put this in the way and hadn't got that 30-day booking?
You wouldn't have got it.
I'd have been pissed. Anyway, back to deal selling, because this isn't we're not talking about service accommodation. So, first thing you need to do, is number one, you need to be able to find good deals.
Yeah.
To find good deals, best to find your niche.
Yeah.
Choose your area, probably local to you. Choose your strategy, whatever works best for the area. Learn about that and learn. You want to be a master at that, an expert at that strategy.
100%.
There's no point specialising in something if you're not a specialist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be really good at BRR, really good at service accommodation, whatever it is.
Have that power team around you.
Have the power team around you. Build it up. Then once you've done that and you're good at finding those deals, what's next?
Then you need to find the investors.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's the best way of finding investors?
So investors are all around you. Yeah. There's nobody that's... You don't have a on your lapel saying, Tony Crook investor. So... And looks can be deceiving, you know?
Yeah.
You're an investor, but I look more like an investor than you do.
Oh, it's because I've shaved the beard and it's a baby face. The baby face.
You're just out of school, aren't you, really? So...
Still at school.
Looks... can be deceiving. You can't just, you've got to treat everybody as they are an investor, first of all. So that's where you start. You need an elevator pitch. You need to understand, you need to tell people what you do, why you do it, how you do it, and the reason for it straight away.
You're a big believer in networking, aren't you?
I do.
You head up all the academy networking groups, the Inner Circle, which is how many people do you sort of get come to that a month?
So over 1,000 people across the country every single month come to our Inner Circle network events. Yeah. And I teach networking. And I, you know, because you get good networkers and bad networkers. A lot of people who network don't know what they're doing. They think they're just going out for a jolly, but it's work.
I find there's two types of bad networkers.
Yeah.
I'm not a brilliant networker, by the way.
You're not sociable.
I'm not. I'm good at the 60-second pitch.
Yeah.
But I'm not very good. Do you know when, like, you walk in a room and there's everyone's chatting? I'm like, I find it awkward to go over to a group and just be like, hi. Do you know what I mean? It's like they're already talking. I'm like, wait, I'm too polite. I'm like, wait for the gap.
You're English, basically.
I'm English. I'm a bit of an introvert as well. I don't like that. Ooh. So I'm not a brilliant networker. I don't really particularly love it. Other than my favourite type of networking is when I used to go to networking a lot, I used to be the speaker.
Yeah.
Because then that way everyone comes up to you, right? So then it's easy because then people are coming up to me and then I can network and I'm fine once we're going. But I don't particularly like approaching people. Have you got any tips for approaching people in that sort of situation?
So once again, have that 60-second, 45-second, 30-second pitch that you always give. And that will then entice people to talk to you, yeah?
So that's the bare minimum, isn't it?
Most network events will give everybody a chance to give a 30-second intro who they are.
So you need to make yours stand out.
Yeah, 100%. Now, it could be the way you dress. It could be the way you talk. It could be the content of your what you're saying. But one of those three needs to stand out. Yeah. So if you're not flamboyant, you can come wear a pink shirt or something to stand out from somebody else. If that's not your thing, you know, you just want to, in what you say, attract people to come to you and talk to you. If you're not going to go attract them, you want them to come to you, what's the reason? Why would they come to you? So going back to tips is having that elevator pitch to tell people what you want to do. But then also, so having the pitch and sort of, and also really sort of going after, why are you there? What's your specific reason? Why have you come to that networking event?
But don't you think this is where a lot of people cock up? Because the reason that they're there, for example, let's say you're a deal seller and you're there because you've got a deal that you want to sell.
Okay, cool.
And then your mind is just like, I want to sell that deal. Don't you think a lot of networkers mess up because they're like, I've got a deal. And they're trying to, here's my deal. Force it down your throat. And like, that's a real turn off, isn't it, when people do that?
Mm-hmm.
So don't you think, I always think the best networkers are the ones who just go in and go, like, not, they don't say, how can I help you? But it's like, so what brought you here then, Tony? And then you show an interest in that. And if it happens to be that your deal matches up, then you sell the deal.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
100%. You don't go straight in selling. You wouldn't go into a crowded bar, walk up to a woman and say, would you marry me?
No.
Because it's not going to happen, is it?
If you look like this, it might. Impossible. But yeah, probably not.
Probably not. So this thing's called courtships. You've got to go through that whole courtship process. Know, like, and trust. So at the moment, when you're walking into a crowded room of networkers, you don't know who they are. So you need to, first of all, say, hey, my name's Tony. Yeah? So know. Like is something which, you know, you maybe have something in common. Maybe they're wearing an Arsenal shirt, and you think, oh, well, they're doing not very good this year, are they? Sort of thing. So you then have a conversation piece about football. Whatever it is, that then builds rapport, builds like. And then trust is something which is gained over time. So you're not necessarily going to be selling your deal there and then to somebody you've only first met.
So what, if you're not selling your deal, what are you doing?
Selling yourself.
And building your list.
And building your list. Yeah. Building that list, building that interest. And then, more than likely, is you're going to go back then to next. Say, hey, Russell, I spoke to you today at the Inner Circle meeting in Bradford. You know, I know you said you're interested in some deals. Well, guess what? I've got a deal that's come up that we might be of interest. Is that something you'd want to talk about?
Mm.
So it's not at that first meeting, because that's, people don't trust people as much, not unless they've got bought experience, bought trust, where, you know, if you belong to a community already, then you might be able to jump into that situation a bit quicker.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, that makes sense. So if we were going to sum it up then, deal sourcing for dummies.
Yeah.
First thing you need to be able to do is you need to be able to find good deals.
Yeah.
And you recommend doing that by narrowing in, niching in on a specific area, specific strategy, and becoming an expert at that, finding good deals.
Yeah.
Second thing you'll be able to do is you've been able to find investors.
Yeah.
Find investors and add them to your list. So you've got a list of investors that are interested in what you're doing. And the best way to find out if they're interested is to ask them questions, to find out if they are. So another way, I suppose, you could find out on what sort of deals you should be looking for is to go networking and ask what people want.
Yeah.
So you could literally just go in and say, like, if I met you at a networking event, I go, hey, Tony, nice to meet you, I'm Russell. So what brings you here then? What you know, what's your strategy right now? What you look? And I'm not selling to you, but I am finding good information.
Yeah.
So, okay, so Tony Crook, I'll write, make a note of it. Tony Crook is looking for HMOs. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
David Smith is looking for HMOs. Oh, I'm seeing a pattern here. HMOs. Okay, most people are looking for HMOs. Maybe that I should find HMOs or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So you find your investors. And then the last thing, I suppose, is once you've got your investors and you've got your product, which is being able to find the deals, then you need to sell it, right?
Yeah.
How important a skill do you think sales is when it comes to deal sourcing or deal selling?
I think it's very important because you can cock it up. You can mess it up. So unless you know how to close and when to close, You know, like I said, closing is sometimes people's biggest fear, but it's also the easiest part if you've done all the steps, the correct steps leading up to that point.
Yeah.
Because the final close is, well, do you want it or not? If you've done your job correctly to begin with.
So, yeah.
But unless you know the steps leading up to it, you can't get yourself into a total rejection.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also you need to make sure you keep yourself legal.
Yeah.
And the biggest way you can do that is having the right contracts, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people, there's a big misconception, I suppose, about compliance, property compliance.
Yeah.
And it all comes down to the way you set yourself up. The way you set up your company, making sure you've got the right SIP codes. So you basically don't want to act as an estate agent. As soon as you position yourself as an estate agent and or a property manager, letting agent type thing, suddenly there's loads of compliance. But if you're just selling the information and using the right contracts for a deal seller, then you'll be okay, right?
Yeah. It's that bit in the middle, isn't it? So where obviously if you've gone through compliance, you can then become trusted and so forth, but you don't need the compliance if you're just the middleman. But if you still have some sort of way of, you know, if there is some discrepancy, to have something to fall back on, some sort of legal system where you can actually reproach anything that was missaid.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be honest, if I was starting from scratch, so if I was literally start, I think deal sourcing or deal selling would probably be the first business that I went into.
The best.
I think it is.
Lowest barrier of entry, you need a phone, and that's it.
Yeah.
So you can get into it straight away.
I would even do it over rent to rent, which I also think is brilliant.
Yeah.
But I think deals, partly because of my personality, I think you have to pick what suits you.
Suits you. What you're passionate about, what you believe in.
Yeah. But I think it's such a brilliant business. Because you mark up on it. The markup is great. Normally when you buy a product, like you were in the printing business for many years, right? What was your typical markup on if you were selling a product?
Well, our net in printing industry is a commodity nowadays. You know, it used to be when I first started printing, it was, you know, fairly profitable. But it's gone to that to 3-4% net profit. 3% net profit of what you're selling. Where in deal selling, it's 1,000%. Yeah, 100% net profit because the cost of what you're doing is so low.
Yeah. You're pretty much just paying for your time.
You're paying for time, isn't it?
Maybe some petrol.
Petrol, telephone. But besides that, there is no cost.
No.
Yeah. So
I can't think of a business that's got a higher net profit percentage.
No.
Because the product is free. You're selling information.
Yeah.
You're not even having to package it up nicely or pay for printing or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is definitely one of the best, businesses.
100%. And, you know, it's something that anybody can do with the right education, with the right training. Yeah. I would press it that you do need that understanding. You do need to know what you're doing. So in that way, there is an investment. There is a cost to it. But once you've got that cost, once you've got the investment into yourself, into the knowledge, then the rest is just pure profit.
Yeah, and you'll gain a lot of experience. If you want to be an investor long term, not only are you earning a lot of cash flow, but you're going to become such a brilliant investor because you can find deals.
Yeah.
Right, so you're going to be a brilliant... When you do start, say, if you're making 30 grand a month from deal selling, you're going to be putting that aside and then using that money to invest in your deals. Cherry pick the best deals.
Sell your own deals to yourself, yeah.
100%. 100%. All right, amazing. Well, Tony, thanks so much for joining me. I'm Russell Leeds.
And I'm Tony Crook.
And we'll see you next week.